Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where professionals in the attractions business can get insight, tips, tools, and even a bit of inspiration. Your hosts are two people familiar with the twists and turns and ups and downs of this great industry. Josh Lieben is the Director of Business Development for Amusement Advantage, and Matt Heller is the founder of Performance Optimist Consulting. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast. This is Matt Heller with Performance Optimist Consulting, and of course, we've also got Josh Liebman from Amusement Advantage. Josh, how are you doing today?
Matt, I'm doing well. I think it is officially fall here in Chicago. It is 60 degrees today after about 2 weeks of straight 80s and 90s, so it's time to break out the jacket.
Finally. I've been waiting for you to break out that jacket. Welcome again, Josh, of course, is the co-host for the Attraction Pros Podcast. And today we are super excited to welcome Matt Eckert, to the podcast. Matt is the president and CEO of Holiday World. Matt, why don't you go ahead and say hello?
Hello. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Wonderful to have you here. Matt's an old friend, and, I say old in air quotes, but, really excited to, really excited to get into this with him. So, Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about Holiday World in case anybody, I can't imagine anybody doesn't know about Holiday World, but just in case, tell us a little bit about Holiday World and then also a little bit about what you do.
Sure thing. So Holiday World, we're located in Santa Claus, Indiana, and we are actually the very first theme park. So we came well before Disney. Sorry, Mickey Mouse fans, but it is true. So we started back in 1946 as Santa Claus Land. And it was kind of seen as a vision of our founder that, we've got this great area called Santa Claus, Indiana. People are bringing their kids here. Nothing is here. Once they get here, we need to do something. So we started a small little park, primarily with a few kiddie rides and a restaurant. And over the course of time, you know, that just continued to grow from a visitation standpoint until about 1984, when we recognized that, you know what, we've become more than just a kiddie park. We want to have more attractions that appeal to families as well. And so at that point, we took the leap and we changed our name to Holiday World, creating several holiday themes throughout the park. So at that time, we had Christmas, Halloween, and 4th of July, and all of our attractions and restaurants and stores were themed appropriately around those specific holidays. So again, attendance, you know, kept growing. Our visitation was climbing pretty rapidly, and around the early 90s, we started to recognize that water parks were the happening thing. So we kind of went on a world tour, checking out a lot of different water parks, and in 1993, we opened Splash and Safari, and that's really when our attendance started skyrocketing. So when I started back in, 2000, our attendance levels were a little bit south of 500,000. And from 2000 on, we're now at well over an average of about 1 million guests a year to a town of about 2,500 people. So we've grown not only in visitation, but in size. We sit on about 110 acres. We have, you know, various events throughout the year. We have Christian music festivals. We have Halloween events. We have all kinds of fun things for families of all ages and all sizes.
Awesome. And you are the Grand Poobah. Is that correct?
You can call me that. That's not what my name tag says, but I like that better, honestly. So I might put that in HR and see what I can do.
Right.
So when I start out here, my background is I am a CPA, which seems to shock everyone because I tend to have a pretty good sense of humor and people think CPAs don't, but that's wrong.
You're here to prove them wrong.
I have a background as a CPA. So I started off when I graduated college. I went to Indianapolis for about 4 years and worked for, at that time, one of the big six public accounting firms, and just eventually knew that, you know, I wanted to move back home, and my wife was from this area as well. So the opportunity came up, came here to Holiday World and started out as their controller, was in that position for 7 years, went through a little bit of reorganization here at the park and created two general manager positions, where I took over general manager of shared services, where HR was part of my wheelhouse, which is where Matt Heller comes in. That's how we met. I was on the IAPA HR committee for several years with Matt. And then in 2013, I was anointed the Grand Poobah.
And there was a little break in there too, wasn't there? You left and then came back as the Grand Poobah.
I did, yeah. I left for about 4 months, I guess, in 2012. But yeah, the family asked me to return, and I couldn't say no. my heart and soul is here at the park.
Yeah. So I'd love to dig into that just a little bit deeper, because as you and I have spoken about, you know, being in a leadership role is tough, you know, in any organization at any level. So what was it like coming back and being the head honcho and, you know, in a park, obviously, that you love and you know a lot of the people. But what was it like coming back into that role?
You know, it was kind of a double-edged sword. You know, I think for me, it just felt comfortable. It felt like coming home. And that was one of the reasons that I did choose to come back into this position, because I really felt like we have a fantastic team of people here. We have a lot of people that are in the right seats on the bus, and they have a lot of passion for what we do. So to have the opportunity to be able to come in and lead such a strong team towards a very common goal is, to me, you know, that's a dream position for a leader to be in.
Awesome.
Matt, one of the things that I think of when I think of Holiday World is I think about the value. I think about free parking, free soda, free sunscreen, and even your water park is included with general admission, right?
Right, yep. I'm glad you're thinking of those things. That's what we
want. Yeah, absolutely. The reason I think of that is because it almost seems either backwards or upside down from most of the industry, whereas those are all additional revenue centers. So can you tell us a little bit, obviously without divulging too much into specifics, the business decisions to make all those included with admission?
Sure thing. Well, I can go back to let me start off with the free unlimited soft drinks, because I think that's one of the more novel and unique ideas and concepts that we brought to the table that is highly uncommon in the industry. And that was introduced in 2000, the year that I started. And I remember when I came in, it was on my very first day of work. You know, I'm coming in as a CPA, I'm looking over the financials, I'm looking over our per caps, and president of the company, Will Cook, who, you know, later became one of my very dear friends. He came in, he's like, okay, I got this crazy idea. I want to start offering free soft drinks to all of our guests. I point blank looked at him and I said, are you stupid? Like, seriously? Like, are you looking at our per cap sheets? Are you seeing the money that we're making? He's like, no, hear me out. And so he started to kind of go through in his mind this wild, crazy idea. And me being the accountant, just sitting there thinking, dude, you're crazy. But you know what? You've got a vision. I'll back you. I'm on it. Let's do it. And everything that he outlined in his crazy head totally came to fruition. I mean, we saw so many upticks, not only from a marketing value. You know, I will firmly and solidly say today that I'm not always right about everything, and this was one that I was glad to be wrong about. You know, if I look at the marketing value that this has provided to the park compared to even the launching of the nation's first wing coaster, unlimited soft drink by far beats it, hands down. You know, that's something that we can hang our hat on forever. And it's something that our guests truly appreciate. And we saw so many other benefits from doing that, not only the marketing piece, but we also saw you know, people come to a park with a discretionary amount of money in their pocket that they plan on spending. And you know, when you're purchasing drinks and you get the idea in your head that, hey, I don't have to spend money on drinks all day, they're still going to spend that money somewhere else. And they're probably going to spend that money somewhere where the margins might be a little bit higher. So we saw our per caps in other areas increase that compensated for the per cap that we did not recognize in food and beverage. The other key to that is we saw a length of stay for our guests because they didn't feel like they were spending so much money on food or on a meal, they were staying for that dinner meal as well. So they weren't leaving before 5 or 6 o'clock to go eat somewhere outside of the park. They're staying so that they can eat here, which increased length of stay, which obviously increased other in-park spending opportunities as well. We saw a decrease in waste. You know, if you think about guests who grab a drink right before they get into a line and then they don't have enough time to drink it all, so they throw it away. So there's a lot of unused liquid that fills those trash cans, become very heavy, very wasteful. We didn't have that. You know, we have kiosks throughout the park where people can pop in and just grab a drink. Moms and dads and kids were just getting enough to kind of quench their thirst and then throwing away their cups, much less waste. The one that we did not think about that truly ended up being a positive attribute as well was we saw the number of our first aid reports decline dramatically because no longer were we having so many people going to first aid from heat and from dehydration, and they were staying more hydrated throughout the day. So it provided so many more benefits than we even imagined that it would, and I think that's something that we can, you know, never turn our back on now at this point. And then, you know, to your other point, yeah, we offer, you know, free unlimited soft drinks, we offer free parking, we offer free Wi-Fi, we offer free tubes to all of our guests that enter the water park. We don't pay a separate charge for Splash and Safari. You pay one price and you get both parks, and that's very important to us. You know, you use the word value, Josh, and that's something that we really pride ourselves in because we want to make sure that our guests don't feel like they're getting nickel and dime as soon as they get through the door. We want mom and dad to be able to put away their pocketbooks and not have the kids saying, can I have this, can I have this, can I have this? We want to give it to them. We want to treat our guests like this is our home and we're welcoming them in, and we want them to just have a great day.
You know, Matt, you mentioned the free sunscreen, and I remember hearing a funny story about, I think it was when the free sunscreen first came out. And
I think I know where you're going with this.
It was placed near the hot dog condiments or something, and people were putting it on their hot dogs.
Yeah, that happened.
So there's a learning curve, but all good stuff.
That did happen, yeah. So I was our guest taking advantage of all our offerings to the full extent.
That's right. That's right. And I love to hear you talk about value and what you bring to the table for your guests and how you treat them. And I've always loved talking to you about that. And most recently, you and I got to hang out for quite a bit at the Golden Ticket Awards. And I wanted to publicly congratulate you again on the Golden Ticket Award for the cleanest park.
Thank you.
Out of all the parks on the planet, you were the cleanest. And I know Josh has a question about that, but I'd like to start off by asking, how do you do it? How do you keep such a large facility so clean?
Obsession. It truly becomes
next question.
No, to be honest, I think it comes down to taking pride in your park, and you know, I feel very blessed that, you know, if we look at our hosts and hostesses, we have about 2,300 hosts and hostesses, and you know, I attribute a lot of that to where we're from. You know, we have a lot of that Southern Indiana work ethic and hospitality, and they're just very proud to be here. And you know, I said we try to treat our park as our home. And you know, if you have guests to come visit your house, what do you usually do before that happens? You know, you clean up, tidy up, straighten up, and that's what we do too. We have our folks coming in here in the mornings at 4 o'clock every morning, spraying down the walkways. We do that every single day. We have folks coming in to empty all the trash liners and stuff to make sure everything is pristine and spotless when our guests first arrive. And then, you know, we kind of task that. It's not just the job of our sweepers and our bussers to keep the park clean. It's everybody's responsibility. And everybody takes it very seriously. So to the point of, you know, if you're walking through the park, I'm hoping that you're not going to see a piece of trash on the ground, because there should have been a host or hostess that walked by it and saw it and picked it up. It almost becomes a game as you see folks walking through the park. They almost race to see who can pick it up first. And it just becomes truly an obsession. And I'm the perfect example. You know, just recently, my wife and I went to Walmart and we're walking through the parking lot, and I saw some trash on the ground. I started to pick it up. And my wife's like, Matt, you're not at the park. You don't have to pick up the trash. But it becomes so ingrained into everything you do. And you know, to win these awards is huge for us, because it's a true recognition of all the things that our kids do. I say kids, they're not all kids, but that our hosts and hostesses do out there every single day. So to see them get recognized for doing something that they're passionate about means the world to us.
And Matt and Josh, before we get to your question, Matt, just a quick follow-up. Can you talk a little bit about what you did to recognize that accomplishment? Because I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So the date, we obviously don't release the results until They're not scrolling tickets, obviously, but I had arranged for, while we were golden tickets, the very next morning, we had some golden ticket cakes ready for our host and hostess when they came into employee services that following morning. So they were served cake by our full-time folks when they got here before their shifts.
That's awesome.
And we serve them, so we make sure we as the full-time folks, we're doing it. We're serving them, not the other way around.
So it's possible that you may have answered this already, but one of the things that I was thinking about when I saw that you guys were recognized as the cleanest park is one of the things that I really love about this industry in general is that every park that I've either worked at or every park that I've been to has very high cleanliness standards. And they always think we are, you know, we are the cleanest. We're focusing so much on it. So my question was, what really makes the difference between the cleanest park and the second cleanest park? And since you really did probably answer a lot of that already, I'll tie it into acknowledging that I believe you guys have also been recognized for many years as the friendliest park as well. So we can tie that in as well. What really sets the difference between first place and second place in really both of those categories?
Sure. You know, I think in my mind, what separates us from first and second in terms of cleanliness is just, again, the attention to detail that we have. You know, I think that I mentioned we have our folks coming in at the crack of dawn, literally, to get that process started. And they take it so seriously, and they're just so proud of the work that they do. And that's not to say other parks aren't either, but just the level of pride that they have and the recognition that we give them. You know, we really make a big deal about it, you know, to them. You know, several years we've actually had little golden ticket bars that we had made that they wear on their lapels to kind of let people know, hey, yeah, we're the cleanest park and we've been recognized for it. And, you know, especially in this generation today, you know, it's a generation of recognition. They want to see what's in it for them, you know. And to be able to get that recognition, I think, is hugely important. As far as the friendliest, so we've been recognized many, many years for being the friendliest park. Past several years, we've gotten beaten by Dollywood. I said that was a little scorn in case you didn't. And I say that with love because I have a lot of friends at Dollywood, and they know that we're after them for this award, too. But, it goes back to, you know, the hospitality and the Southern Indiana charm that I feel like, you know, we have, and we really work with them. We have hospitality trainings throughout the year several times. And those hospitality trainings can be as simple as, you know, just working on some ways that our hosts and hostesses should greet a guest or ways that they can interact with a guest to kind of make that interaction a little bit more special. You know, some kids come in very shy, and so I'll challenge them. I'm like, okay, today I want you to commit to making eye contact and saying hi to 5 people. Do that today. Okay? Then tomorrow, do it to 6 people. Then the next day. So just keep ramping it up until you feel comfortable. And time again, you know, we have our hosts and hostesses who come back and help with hospitality trainings that say, you know, when I started working here, I was, you know, completely and totally introverted, and I just did not want to have any interaction. And now I'm perfectly comfortable in getting up here and standing, speaking in front of 350 of you to tell you it is possible. And if you do the things that they ask you to do, and if you take advantage of the tools that they're offering, you will get there. So I think that's what makes the difference between first and second place, is not only providing the tools that are necessary to make that happen, but also continuing to reinforce that and to continually give recognition for a job well done.
And Matt, you mentioned some of that training, and it's fantastic that you can, sort of continue it throughout the season, right? Because I think so many places try to kind of bulk everything in the beginning and then hope it kind of takes shape as the season goes along. Do you guys still, I know one time you told me that you really focus on the safety and the policies at first, and then you bring them back for hospitality after that. Is that still right, kind of something how you separate it?
It is. So, you know, at the beginning, when they first start, we several years ago started bundling a lot of our orientation into online to kind of focus that piece of it more on policies and rules and, you know, safety. And I don't want to downplay safety because we have several safety trainings throughout the season as well. But to try to get some of those more hard things to be a little bit less personal, because those kinds of things are hard to make personal. But to really focus more on the live orientation pieces, on those things that will really impact our guests and things that our guests are really going to see. And that primarily is those soft skill interactions that, you know, you have to really truly kind of be in the moment to experience.
That's awesome. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, kind of coaching someone. How involved are you at the president level in that piece?
I'm pretty involved. I mean, I think that kind of goes back to my background. You know, I'm very interested and excited about the human capital piece of our business and our folks. And so I, you know, I try to attend as many of the hospitality trainings as I can. But then, you know, I'm out in the park quite a bit too. And so if I see someone who, you know, if I walk past somebody and I say hello, or if they don't say hello first, I'll pull them to the side and say, okay, how's your day going? Like, tell me about your day. What's going on? And a lot of times that's all it takes, is they just need to be asked. They need to be shown that, hey, somebody cares about my day too. And it just completely makes them do a 180. And, you know, then the next time I see them, they're typically, they'll point out, they'll say, hey, Matt, how's it going? And I think that's all it takes a lot of times, is you just need to kind of help break down that wall. So I try to do that as much as I can. I try to, you know, stop in the food stand. I try to hop into a game just to interact with the host, because I think if they see that that's happening, they're going to emulate that behavior towards our guests.
And it helps, you know, de-emphasize the myth about accountants being boring.
Exactly. Far from it.
You know, one of the things in regards to friendliness or guest service in general that I really love about that concept is that it really can't plateau. So with all of the things that you've mentioned here, as far as energizing and motivating and training your staff, as far as friendliness, and this is, you know, golden tickets aside, that if you say, well, we are the best, or we are doing our best, and it's, you know, it's showing in service scores, TripAdvisor, and things like that. What I've always said is, okay, even if you are the best, well, now what? You know, what do you do from there? So, exactly. Yeah. So curious, I guess, what your thoughts are and what you do to motivate yourself on that concept that guest service can't plateau. You say, okay, this is the peak of friendliness that we can be.
Sure. You know, I'm a big believer in, and one of the phrases that I absolutely hate hearing is, well, if the wheel's not broke, why fix it? Mm-hmm. My response is, it may not be broken, but we can make the wheel move faster. We can make the wheel move more efficiently. We can make the wheel move in a way that it's never moved before, because it has to move differently now. And I think that kind of applies here. You know, our guest demographic, our employee demographic is going to constantly be changing. You know, it's a very dynamic and fluid piece of data. So we've got to constantly be keeping our eye and our minds on what is next, and what are they needing, and what's going to excite them, and what means the most to our employees, what means the most to our guests. And it's just constant conversations and constant discussions about what's the next thing we can do to take our guest experience to the very next level. And a lot of times it's, you know, a variety of different ways. It's through conversation. It's through what's the next value option that we can offer. Those sorts of things. And I think that's the key, is just keeping our eye on how our environment is constantly changing.
And I think that is, very well, that played out very well, certainly with the free soda and the free soft drinks, or not the, that's the same thing, sunscreen. But what I was going to say was that, in looking forward, it's as much about what the guest sees as what they experience, even sort of, if you use the term offline. So, you know, just before we started recording on the call, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the podcast at Holiday World and the fact that Holiday World was the first company to do a blog in the industry. And, you know, those are other ways that you kind of put that thought process out there of what can we do next? What else can we do? How else can we make that wheel run a little bit more efficiently? So since we're on a podcast, I'd love to get your thoughts on the Holiday World podcast. And, you know, feel free to do a little plug. But just first of all, why'd you start doing it? And what has it really brought to you as an organization?
No, the way that it got started, and Paula Werner, who's our director of communications, who is fantastic. She's probably, if not the best in the industry at what she does. It started back in 2013, 2014, when myself and the Cook daughters were in my office with Paula, and we were talking about the Thunderbird, and we were telling stories, and we were kind of just, you know, having a good time. I was like, we need to have a podcast. We need to capture this. We need to, you know, let our guests see that we're not all business, that we are a lot of fun and games, and kind of give them a feel of who we are and what we're all about. And we wanted to kind of, you know, share that with them. So that's kind of where it got to start. So the podcast does have a lot of very park-specific type information. We talk about a lot of things that about the park and about the history and about things that are going on currently, but we also, you know, insert, you know, very anecdotal stories about ourselves and about our lives so that we can kind of let our guests see that we're human and we make mistakes and we have fun, and it kind of makes them feel like, you know, we're their friends, so to speak. And so it's one more way that we felt like we could invite our guests into our home and let them invite us into theirs to just kind of talk with us. And I'll be honest, I went into it fairly skeptical, kind of like I did with the free soft drinks. I need to learn them just wrong all the time, I guess. So you know, I tell Paul, I'm like, who's going to want to listen to me? Like, who's going to want to listen to us? Like, we think we're entertaining, but I don't think anybody else is going to. She's like, no, trust me, they will. So we're on, I think we just recorded episode 43. We're doing episode 44 tomorrow, and our last podcast had like 7,000 downloads.
Awesome.
Which we thought was pretty impressive after a year and a half of doing it. So yeah, it's a good time. We have fun. So it's myself, Paula Werner, Lauren Crosby, one of the owners, then Eric Rentz, our director of attractions, and then sometimes Leah Cook is sitting in as well, but she's getting her MBA right now, so she comes when she can. And then we have, you know, special guests every now and then. We've had Santa Claus. We've had one of our divers. We've had our magician. We've had, you know, other staff members. So we try to have a special guest each week to just kind of, you know, shake it up and talk about some other fun things.
What are the usual topics that you guys talk about?
Well, we always talk about, we call it amusing. So we talk about things that are amusing that's going on in the park, or things that, you know, we find interesting. For example, I'll give you a sneak peek of tomorrow's, because we got a letter a while back thanking us from a guy in New York City, and he had been here. He had lost his phone on one of the rides. One of our VPs at the end of the night went out and helped him find it, so he located it. He was extremely grateful. He wrote this thank you letter. He addressed it to me, and he said, I just want to say thank you. That's so above and beyond anything that, you know, any other park would have done. He's like, but I do want to say that when I was 7 years old, I was at Santa Claus Land and I lost my Batman wallet and it had $7 in it. And to this day, I'm still just devastated. They put, you know, ha ha. He was joking around. So I got on Amazon. I bought a Batman wallet. It came in. I put $7 in it and I sent it to him. And I wrote a letter and signed it from Santa and said, you know, I'm so glad you let us know. We've had this billfold for X number of years. We didn't belong to because it didn't have any identification. Now we know. We can close that loop. And, you know, thank you so much. So I got another letter back then from him this week and said, and he's like, thank you, Santa, for sending that to me. And he's like, I did want to point out that I had a typo in my letter though, and I said $7, it was actually $700. And then he, you know, again, but ha ha, he said, I'm glad Santa can take a joke, even if it's a bad one. But he's like, and they put P.S. I've used your letter to prove to my children that Santa Claus truly is real.
Oh, nice.
It's things like that. You know, it's things that we do here, I think, that are kind of a little extra. We try to go above and beyond and try to really give our guests something that they'll remember and then something that kind of sets us apart. And that was a very small thing to do. Like, that took nothing. But we try to find those little things that we can kind of put our touch on that's different than any other park could do. And I say that all the time. I tell our folks, like, we're Holiday World. We have holidays. Like, what other park can say that? What other park can own that? What other park can do what we do? We can be so goofy and so corny, and it works for us. Let's take advantage of our corniness and let's exploit it.
And just the fact that, oh, go ahead, Josh. I was going to say, just the fact that you could send him that from Santa Claus is so
right?
Cool. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I sent it. So right now, this is how crazy we are. So we have, it's Halloween time. So we have a new attraction here called Carnival Chaos. There's this one section where, here our guests have to go through this area called Tommy's Tonsils. It's like this inflated, I don't even know what you call it, but it's like you're completely enclosed and it's like pushing up against you and you have to work your way through it. And I went through it the other day with a news reporter and we got to the end and there was a little like mark on the wall as you came out. So I sent a text message to one of our development guys and I said, hey, there's a mark on the wall by Tommy's Tonsils. Can you check it out? And I just have to think, how many other people send text messages that have the word Tommy's Tonsils in it? Like, that's
right.
Just crazy weird. But so I guess, you know, go back to your question, Josh. So we talk about that. We talk about what we call it Ho-Wo-Po feedback, because that's our hashtag, Ho-Wo-Po. So you can go on Twitter and you can leave messages and whatnot and ask questions, and we answer those on the podcast too. So we have our listeners who ask quite a bit of questions. Paula instituted this extremely annoying game that we have to play every time. It's called, first of all, it's like 70 degrees of separation last year because it was our 70th anniversary. So she would take three names of people who were born in 1946. And we in some way, shape, or form had to tie that person back to something about Holiday World. That's hard to do. So this year, we're like, okay, we can't play that game anymore. She's like, no, this year we're going to play 33 degrees of separation since we changed our name to Holiday World in 1984. So now we're going to do anything that's 33 years old. Like, oh, for the love of Pete, let's think of something new. But she has a great time with it. For whatever reason, our listeners seem to love hearing us make fools out of ourselves too. So we just have a good time with it. You know, it's just fun.
That's awesome.
So I want to let you know I have officially subscribed to the podcast. Which, by the way, for our listeners, you can find at holidayworld.com/HollySounds, H-O-L-I, sounds. So I've subscribed to it on iTunes. I'll be tuning in from now on. Can you tell me, you know, how much of it do you use the podcast for commercial purposes versus the entertainment content that you were referring to with the letters and games and things like that?
It is purely for entertainment purposes. We don't use it for commercial purposes at all. You know, we talk about things that are coming up, you know, at the park, and we talk about events, and we talk about things of that nature on the podcast. But, and obviously you can find it on our website too, but it's not like glaring at you. So it's not something we've really promoted a whole lot. But it's been more for fun and for entertainment purposes and educational purposes, you know, too. It's been neat to have Lauren and Leah on the podcast too, because we do talk a lot about Holiday World history, and a lot of it is things that they didn't know, which is even more special to them because it's their family. You know, it's things about their family that they did here at the park that they weren't aware of. So it's neat to kind of see that education and family tie infused into everything too.
And I think it's neat how you even bring that to the park visitors, even though they may not know. Like, there's the shop up by Thunderbird, and I can't remember the specifics, but there's a picture, or the shop is named for somebody that worked there.
Yeah, one of my favorite people of all time, actually, his name is Joe Hovering, and he was our director of Cash Control and Flowers, unique combination, I know. But Joe started
working here in 1946, and he's a longtime employee, probably the most dedicated, loyal employee you could possibly find. And he passed away from brain cancer in 2011. And so when we were doing the Thunderbird and we were theming that area, you know, we started talking about what are some ways that, you know, this is going to have kind of an old-time throwback feel. What are some ways that we can use this area to kind of pay homage to some of our employees, especially our longtime employees? And so we named the shop up there Hepburn's Mercantile. And so we took a lot of pictures of Joe from not only when he worked here, but as a child. And we used that as kind of decorative items within the park. And then if you look, you know, throughout the park or throughout that section, like our storage house for our energy that we use to launch the Thunderbird, the flywheels, it's in a building called Willpower, which is after Will Cook. If you look inside the Q station, we have several, you know, lever decorations. Our signage advertisements for made up businesses that we used named after our employees. So we have one called Frida's Flowers. Frida was our greenhouse manager who worked here until she was 98 years old. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we paid homage to her. And we used a lot of our other longtime employees' names in the decorative pieces as well. Just kind of show our employees, our full-time employees, how grateful and thankful we are for everything they do and have done for the park.
So is it just a matter of time before we see an eatery called, you know, Eckert's Edibles or something?
I would say it'll probably have to happen after I'm dead. I'm a little too humble for that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Of course.
Sounds too weird to me.
Yeah. So Matt, you mentioned a while back on the call that when you were looking to build a water park, you went around and looked at, you know, all the other things that the different parks are doing and kind of took the best of the best. And I'm just curious, nowadays in your role and in your position in the industry, when you go to another park, whether it's a small mom and pop, it's a family entertainment center, it's Universal or Disney, what kind of things are you looking for, or what kind of things do you notice that catch your eye?
Yeah, you know, for me, I'm constantly looking at, you know, we've kind of become known as a superlative park. You know, when we do things, we want to be the ST of something. So we want to be the first or the longest or the fastest or the tallest. So I'm constantly looking at, okay, well, if we did that, what would we do differently to make it stand out and be unique to Holiday World? We don't want to have just another cookie cutter wing coaster. We want it to be something different that our guests couldn't get anywhere else in the nation. Are we going to add some rides that are just standard rides? Sure we are. I mean, we've had years where, years ago, I guess 2013, we brought in a Mayflower swinging ship ride. You know, that's just kind of a standard theme park ride, but in terms of something that we're going to use as a marquee attraction that's going to really have some draw, we want to make sure that it's a superlative ride of some sort. So I look at that, and I look at those types of rides, and I try to think, would this fit into our demographic? Is this something Sally would like? When I say Sally is our made-up mom that we ask ourselves questions about all the time, and when we do our marketing campaigns, you know, we ask, okay, is this something that would appeal to Sally? And Sally is our typical mom of a family of three with a dog, a house, a white picket fence. That's kind of the demographic we're going after. And so is this something that Sally would want to bring her family to experience? And so when I go to other parks, I look at that. You know, I look at, you know, you can't help but compare to other parks. So clearly you're always gauging their friendliness. What are their hosts and hostesses doing that's above and beyond that maybe we could do too? You know, imitation is the best form of flattery. So what are they doing that maybe we need to leverage and use here as well? And that those are the kind of things that I feel like, you know, I'm constantly scoping out.
We're also one of, or I think you guys were actually the first to have a blog for the park, right?
We were, yes.
So tying that into, I guess, kind of thinking, in terms of the podcast is probably, you're also probably one of, if not the first, to have your own podcast. Is that right? Or
am I wrong? We are the first to have our own podcast, too, which I think was another drive for Paula because it was a superlative that we could jump on.
Sure. So how did those ideas come about to start each of those? Because clearly you're keeping up with the trends, with the times, with how people are connecting with businesses online and whatnot. But it sounds like you're not benchmarking against industry standards. You're going above that or beyond that. So curious how those ideas were formed.
Sure. So again, I think you kind of alluded to the fact that we just try to keep our eyes and ears open as to what the environment is doing around us and where we see the most pickup and play. And our world has dramatically become a very digital world, for sure, especially with our youth. I mean, my kids are tied to social media more than they're tied to the human interaction world sometimes. I have to pull them down. And so I think for the blog, for Paula, that was the way. She's like, we have stories to tell. We have things that we can talk about. We have ways that we can infuse our personality to our guests in a way that just posting something simple on a website is not going to convey. Let us be a storyteller. And Paula's great at doing that. And so she, I remember she came to Will, she's like, I think we need a blog. And he was like, a what? She's like, a blog. So she kind of talked through what the blog was. He's like, okay, let's try it. Let's do it. And so that's kind of where that idea was born, was she knew that we had a story to tell, and she knew that we had a story that people would want to hear. And so that's kind of what got that started, and that was a fantastic medium to, get that underway. Same thing with the podcast. It was this situation where there's another medium out there. Podcasts are growing. The popularity of podcasts are becoming increasingly more popular, and you guys have things that we think people are going to want to hear you talk about. So let's try it. So I was like, all right, we'll see. I don't know how it's going to go, but let's try it. And I think that's something that I really take a lot of pride in about us, is we're willing to take a lot of calculated risks. We're willing to try some things that are new. I said imitation is the strongest form of flattery. And I feel like we have been flattered many times, because I think a lot of other parks have imitated a lot of things that we've done. And so when that happens, people are like, oh, I can't believe they're doing that. We did that. I'm like, that's awesome that they're doing that. That means we did it well. That's why they want to do it. And so I think that's the key for us, is always trying to take some risks on what we think is going to provide us with the biggest form of feedback. And so far, I think we've done really, really well with that.
So any idea what's next?
No, oh, yeah.
I have lots of ideas about what's next, but I can't tell. I told him we're talking about on the podcast tomorrow. That's the biggest preview you're getting.
Yeah, he's going to save that for his own podcast.
Exactly. My kids don't even know what's next. I kept the Thunderbird from them until the day it was announced, which they got so much flack at school, and they still do. They're all constantly bothering and saying, okay, what's Holiday World do next year? And my kids at this point are like, do you really think my dad's going to tell me anything after Thunderbird? Seriously?
Right. So Matt, I'm sensing a theme sort of culturally that, like you said, you're willing to take some of those calculated risks, and so often companies are not willing to take those. So sort of a two-part question. Culturally, what makes it okay to take that risk? And then have you taken some risks that have not panned out?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think what makes it okay is, I think you have to be willing to try new things, or you're just going to constantly be having that wheel that works. The wheel's not broke, why fix it? Yeah, we're doing fine, we're doing great, but we need to constantly push ourselves to be better. You look at someone like Thomas Edison. Do you know how many inventions he had that were complete and total and utter failures? Hundreds. But we remember the ones that are phenomenal and have changed our lives. So had Thomas Edison not taken as many risks as he did, our lives would be fundamentally different than they are right now. And so I'm not saying that we're Thomas Edison by any stretch of the imagination, but you've got to be willing to try those new things to see what will work, what is going to make our wheel move faster, what is going to make our wheel move more quickly, and what is going to make our wheel get there before someone else does.
in terms of things that we've tried that hasn't worked, we've tried tons of things that haven't worked, and, you know, from fairly small things. I'll give you an example. One thing down in the water park this year, for years and years and years and years, you know, we're kind of known for our pizza. We have really good pizza here. But our guests are constantly saying, and we offer cheese, we offer pepperoni, we offer sausage. Our guests for years have said, do you guys have a vegetarian option? Do you guys have a buffalo chicken option? We haven't. And so we had a restaurant down in the water park that we said, okay, why don't we turn this into a personal pan pizza restaurant? That's all we're going to do. We're just going to sell pizza here. We'll offer like 10 different variations. Total flop. Total flop. Guess what people bought? Sausage, pepperoni, or cheese.
Cheese, yeah.
Yes. And the percentage of the other ones that were purchased, minimal. So it's like, okay, that was not a good idea. You know, that was, but we needed to try it to see if it would be. And so it wasn't. So I met with our F&B team yesterday. We're changing up the menu again next year to try something else that we think might work. And, you know, we'll continue to play with that recipe, pun intended, until we find out what works. And but last year what we tried didn't, but we had to try it to see, or we would have never known.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, speaking for Josh, I know that we have had a lot of fun talking to you today, and I know you won't tell us anything that's new at Holiday World that you won't tell your kids, but if you would want to, you know, tell people how they can find out more about Holiday World and, you know, what kind of things they can expect when they go there, that would be great.
Well, you know, you can always keep up with the latest on our website, so holidayworld.com. We keep it very current. Our Facebook page, like I said, Paula is fantastic in the realm of social media, so you can follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You can follow our podcast, Ho-O-Po, H-O-P-O, H-O-W-O-P-O, let me get it right, and you can follow us on there. And I think that's the best way to you know, find out the latest and greatest in terms of, you know, what I can tell you is we're going to continue to keep growing and expanding. Where we currently sit on about 110 acres, and we have about another 95 to 100 to develop. So we can essentially double in size. We're very blessed that we're not landlocked. We have a lot of room to grow, and we have plans to do so. It's going to happen. And that's both in the dry park, and that's also in Splash and Safari. So I think there's some pretty exciting things coming up in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
That is exciting. That's awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. And I can't wait till the next time we get to chat.
Anytime. Just give me a call. I'll be more than happy to do it.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us on the Attraction Pros Podcast. For more information on Josh Liebman, please visit amusementadvantage.com. For more information on Matt Heller, please visit performanceoptimist.com.